When I first started in marketing, I definitely skewed negative more than I had to. It took a lot of listening to my clients to understand that, no, for customers to experience the brand in a positive way, there is a place for negativity, but that place is much more limited than the overall marketing world would have us believe.
Welcome to Email Swipes, where we peek behind the scenes at the emails that catch your attention and earn their place in your swipe file. Every other week, we'll talk to an email expert about an experiment they ran, and in the following episode, we'll dive into the strategies and methods used in the email so you can inform and inspire your own email work. I'm Mickey Elbaz, the copywriter behind winning emails for 8- and 9-figure SaaS and e-commerce brands like Shopify, Four Sigmatic, and Sprout Social. And I know that hearing the background stories to these emails will help you turn pie-in-the-sky insights into plug-and play actions. Ready to make inspiration tactical? Let's go. First, a quick recap of the email we discussed last week that we'll be digging into today. You don't want to read another doors are closing email, even though, yeah, the hinges are indeed squeaking closed. So this isn't your usual closing time email. This is an email with a song? Tap this GIF to hear the whole thing. So while the big savings on Copy School Forever Ever are indeed coming to a fast close, we opted to forgo the mandatory OMG Act Now email and invite you to sing along with us, or at least enjoy knowing you're not the only nerd on the planet, before singing your way into Copy School. It is, officially, closing time. Joe. P.S. So, we won't be quitting our day jobs anytime soon to start a semi-sonic cover band. Some dreams will just have to wait. Likewise, if you're planning to lock in your status as a well-paid and highly performing copywriter for the long haul, this is your best chance to secure it. PPS, if there are only seconds left on this countdown timer as you read this, skip the song and pick your plan here. I think I can safely say that this episode is the one that I learned the most from. Rai is the best teacher. I just love his perspectives on how humans work and how he unpeels his copy to reveal really smart ideas that go much deeper than fun or smooth wordsmithery. Okay, so let's get into all the smart ideas. I was so grateful for the AI conversation. I was on a brainstorming/mastermind-style call once, and the topic was outsourcing struggles. Everyone always says, outsource, 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 like it's the solution to all your problems. But the truth is that managing people is its own skill and comes with its own set of challenges. Anyway, Avital Oetskeld was on the call, and she said something so thought-provoking. She said she had always learned to outsource the things you're not good at. She runs a branding agency and loves the strategy side of things, so she outsources the copy, outsources the design, but she does the overall strategy. She's running the ship. She heard us, a bunch of boutique copy agencies, all trying to hire for copy, and she was so confused why we would do that. If that was our secret sauce, our enjoyment even, why were we outsourcing it? I'm not 100% sold on not hiring copywriters, possibly because I think the strategy side of thing is more important than the actual copy. But also because unlike a branding agency, there's just not a lot of other things we can outsource. It did, however, get me thinking if we could expand our services and outsource those things. And so we are actually now offering design and implementation services as a growth experiment. All this to say that outsourcing has to work, and like I mentioned in the episode, it has not been working for me to outsource the writing to AI. I use AI for plenty of other things, especially in the planning stages or the polishing stage, and that works. But for me to continue to dump time and energy and effort and guilt into something that clearly isn't working, just because there's so much hype about AI being the next frontier and needing to embrace it to stay relevant, well, not so in this particular aspect of my work. Oh, and by the way, we didn't dig into Rai's actual tweet in the episode, how humans have to become more divine to combat AI becoming more human. I think most people would define becoming more divine as being more kind, more generous, emotional, connective, relationship type stuff. But I'm actually thinking to become more divine means to become more like a creator, to tap into our creative side more, to not just churn out that first headline that comes to us, but to push harder on creativity and innovation, to do what AI can't tap into because it doesn't exist yet to add to their learning models. But hey, it can be both. So anyway, takeaway number one, I am officially giving you permission to use AI or even your real live human workers for that matter, the way that works for you. You won't become obsolete just because you want to do a part of the process yourself. You may have to adapt down the line, but by then it'll feel natural and AI will hopefully be good enough too.
I'm pretty sure you don't have to prepare for the worst in advance, just in case. Next, Rye, or Ryan really, I'm still getting over that one, said that one of the criteria for things that he writes is, would I say this to someone in real life? I've been feeling this a lot lately because I finally read Chris Voss's Never Split the Difference. I liked it. I think there was a lot there that makes a lot of sense, and I've even seen it generate some great results. Where I'm struggling is with some of the things that don't feel right for my personal style. It's hard to differentiate between discomfort from newness, or is it something that I'm genuinely uncomfortable with as a person? When I feel that sense of unease, is it just hard, feeling a little scripted, speaking slightly differently than usual, or is it something that I don't agree with? One thing that helps me for this is understanding the strategy behind the scripts. For example, one of the Voss scripts that feels uncomfortable for me is switching everything to elicit no answers. So instead of saying, is now a good time to talk, you say, is now a bad time to talk? He recommends this because it's a lot easier for us as humans to commit to a no than it is to a yes. We have more emotional bandwidth for no's. You get answers more easily when you try to get a no instead of a yes. When I first started incorporating some Voss stuff into my language, I attributed the discomfort to the newness of the script. And so I did cross a line once in some pitches for this podcast. A follow-up email that I wrote to no repliers came off harsher than I would like for my relationships. If I had paid more attention to the why behind the script, I could have still phrased the email to elicit that no answer, but in a softer, less aggressive way than the original script felt to me. So yeah, I've been cognizant of that idea of would I say this in real life. On the other hand, I'm also wondering how this fits into copy when you're not writing for personal brands. I know there's a lot of talk about how B2B is really people to people and we have to treat B2B marketing the same as B2C marketing, but I think there's a lot of gray here. I think there is still 100% room for differences between B2B and B2C, and one of those things might be saying things that we don't say in real life. I kind of laugh when I see LinkedIn posts ranting about how annoying it is when people say corporate-y, jargony things like circling back or let's do a rain check. Yes, there's jargon that's vague or trying too hard and definitely does not have a place in copy that needs to clearly communicate value. But in conversation, when the meaning is very clearly understood but just isn't in the lexicon of non-business normal people talk, can we just admit that corporate culture has its own dialect and that's okay? Just like it's okay to dress differently for business, it's okay to speak differently for business. Sure, not everyone does dress differently for business, but it's an acceptable thing to do. Same thing for language. Shout out to Sophia, who we featured in episode 11, for helping me clarify why I roll my eyes at these posts. So takeaway number two, if you're feeling that tension of, would I say this in real life? Dig into the why. Sometimes it's okay to say things that you wouldn't say in real life. Sometimes it's not. It's all about the why. If you love email swipes, you will love my playbooks. They are chock full of inspiration with dozens of examples, color-coded breakdowns, and all the whys and hows and wheres and whats of all the different e-com flows. Even better, they're affordable. One anonymous copywriter said, in a world full of $1,000 and $2,000 copywriting courses, being able to learn a sequence for $52 is amazing. By the way, you can learn them for even less if you get the whole bundle. Another piece of feedback that I loved, I purchased the Welcome Sequence Playback and loved it. It's an easy, flowing read, and following it is a breeze. I love how it's so actionable. It takes you step by step through the process, but you don't end up with a templated sequence that sounds the same. I also love how you brought in relevant examples to prove the point you were making. I pull it up before every welcome sequence I write. That's a big point of these playbooks, that you don't end up with the same thing every single time, that you understand the strategy. Just like copywriter Paul Melrose says, since using Nikki's playbook, starting work on an e-commerce email sequence without the playbooks would feel like jumping out of a plane without a parachute. And these are not copy and paste solutions either. They work because Nikki gets you to understand the essential concepts at play so you can solve your own or your client's email problems. Big love and appreciation for what she's given us. Thanks, Nikki. But don't think it's all theory. Holly Williams says, had a quick turnaround deadline on an email sequence I hadn't written in a while, but I didn't even sweat it. I pulled up one of Nikki's playbooks and voila, I had a winning sequence in record time. Nikki's playbooks give you the perfect roadmap for using the data you have to craft email sequences that perform well every single time. Thanks, Nikki. I love your playbooks. And one last one, this one from a founder. I put into action the FAQ email and the 12-hour warning email you suggested, along with two other emails and two texts, and I got over $105,000 in revenue in the weekend from the promo. Pretty neat. Never made so many sales via email. Your book helped me save time to get this done.
So whether you want to save time, understand things better, or just get some amazing inspiration, go grab a playbook or two or 12 at nikkialbus.com/email-playbooks. And yes, that link is in the show notes. Wish you were in e-com just so that you could grab my playbooks, but you're in SaaS? Don't worry, I got your back with the SaaS Success Pack. Say that 5 times fast. Okay, don't. Just head to the show notes. You'll find the link and grab it there. Okay, back to our show.
Next, I'm not going to get into the whole lightening the mood on a cart close day because Rye unpacked it absolutely perfectly. I have nothing to add. But I do want to just give a nod to how genius it is. This is what I love about conversion copy. Not just the funny or fun or quote-unquote brand voice stuff. There's always something deeper, so much behind the words that we write. And I'd venture to say that this is where AI will struggle. This is even where copy by committee struggles. The strategy stuff, the whys, the human connection. So takeaway number 3. Remember what Rye said. People read in a neutral tone of voice. Are you shifting things to control the emotion when they read? By the way, because I mentioned Voss earlier, he actually says the opposite. He says that people will skew negative, not neutral. That they'll read whatever you write in the worst possible interpretation, which is why you have to be so careful. Either way, it's our job to take the reins and shift things as we need to. When I mentioned what a good move this email was from a branding perspective, not just from a conversion perspective, Rye posited that the true definition of branding is that we should come away from every touchpoint with a brand better for it somehow. And I think this is why marketing can sometimes feel sleazy. Yes, sometimes you see outright lies that give us that sleaze reputation, like act now offers that don't actually expire or re-emails from people you've never had contact with previously. But sometimes there are no lies, but it still feels sleazy. And I think this is the defining point. Do we come away from a brand touchpoint for the better? And I don't necessarily mean make the world a better place better. It can even just be emotionally better. But when brands use fear tactics or desperation even, it just feels icky. When they push you to feel a negative emotion or even just an overly hyped up emotion, that's what gives it that sleaze factor. We don't enjoy that. It's a branding hit, not a win. When I first started in marketing, I definitely skewed negative more than I had to. It took a lot of listening to my clients to understand that, no, for customers to experience the brand in a positive way, there is a place for negativity, but that place is much more limited than the overall marketing world would have us believe. So takeaway number 4. Every touchpoint is a branding opportunity, which means every email you send is a branding opportunity. Cart close emails are always conversion focused. That's their job, to get those last sales. But even still, they are, without a doubt, a branding opportunity. By the way, stay tuned for next week's episode where we feature an email that uses Re, but in a different way than you would expect. Thanks for geeking out with me about that email story. If you enjoyed either of these episodes, you'll probably enjoy getting my emails. Plus, you'll never miss another episode. Sign up at nikkialbus.com/subscribe. And yes, that link is in the show notes.